This podcast is a production of Crosspoint Church. Visit us online at crosspointwithane.org.
Well, good morning. Great having you with us here today on this good rainy day. And so as always, our ushers are going to come forward and they're going to give us another opportunity just to continue to worship and to trust God with our finances. And so if you want to worship God in that way, I would invite you to go ahead and do that now. While they're doing that, many of you know that ever since our former student pastor, John McLarnon, transitioned off our staff to plant a new church in Garner, we've been prayerfully and diligently searching for a new pastor of our student ministries to oversee our junior and senior high students. And so today I'm very thankful to announce that God has made that person clear to us. And thankfully, he's made it clear to him as well. And that he and his wife will be moving and joining our leadership team in just over a month. And so we're really excited about that. And so rather than kind of going through all the details now and telling you all about him, and also just to protect him and his confidentiality, he's explaining to his church the transition that he's going to be making, his current church, here in the next couple days. And so I just want to give him that time to do that. But I'll be emailing more to everybody this week, more of his biographical information so that you can get to know him and start praying for him more specifically. But I know that there is one thing that everyone is wondering and that I can let you know is that, yes, our new pastor does have hair. And so I know that's a big thing. That was a real pressure type of a thing that if we added one more pastor with a shaved head, they were going to think we were part of some cult or something. And so the process took a little while longer because that was one of the criteria that you had to have hair, and we just kept knocking people off the list. But so we're excited about that. Also, want to let you know that next week we're starting, Stephen alluded to it earlier, a new series of teachings called 316. And for the next 6 weeks, Steve Dougherty and I are going to kind of just dive into and begin to dissect one of the most famous passages of Scripture in the Bible, John 3:16. And this is a series that we've been praying about and thinking about and studying for just several months. And so we're just really excited about it and hope that, you'll enjoy it as well. And so that kicks off next week, and just wanted to let you know that. But this week, what we're doing is we're wrapping up our series that we've been in these last few weeks called Them Are Us. As we continue to look at these things that we can tend to see in other people and be critical of, and yet when we give time to reflect on our own lives and our own hearts, we can discover that the things that we look at in other people and that we're critical of, we discover that we have those same types of tendencies in ourselves. You know, about 8 years ago, I was a student pastor at a church in Ohio. And the senior pastor there at the time had two young kids about the same age my kids are now, 5 and 2 years old. And I remember several times we would stand around after a service and people would be coming up to him and they'd say, "Hey, where's your kids?" And he'd be like, "I don't know. They're running around somewhere." And Andrew and I weren't parents at the time. And so I remember very often we'd get in the car on the way home and we would be like, I mean, how irresponsible as a parent can you be? You know, you're just like, what in the world's going on? And so, you know, 8 years later, we find ourselves inevitably many times here on a Sunday morning talking to people, standing around a group of people, and people come up to us and say, "So, you know, where's your kids?" And I'm like, "I don't know, you know. They're probably running around somewhere. Somebody's watching them. They know what the pastor's kids look like. They probably won't let them jump in the baptistry or something, you know." But yeah, it's just, you know, this thing that before we looked at as, you know what, that's really irresponsible parenting. Now we just prefer to look at it as we have responsible children, you know. But, you know, this thing that before was just like, oh, I can't believe somebody would do that. Now it just makes complete sense to us, you know. Now we just get it. And that just seems to be a trend in parenting, especially with us, where there's things like, there's no way you would need that. Like DVD players in cars, for instance. You know, for the longest time, I was like, wow, that is just way over the top. I mean, who needs a DVD player in their car to just entertain your kid? Just let them look outside and enjoy God's creation and all that, and everything will go fine. But then after driving back and forth to Kentucky a few times, I'm like, how in the world does somebody not survive without one of these things? I mean, you've got to have one of these things. And sometimes it's not even to Kentucky, to be honest with you. Sometimes it's just driving to Raleigh, and you're like, man, we've got to have that. Or if I just want some peace and quiet, talk to my wife, it's just down the street. And I'm like, whatever it takes just for us to have some time and some peace and quiet. And so we discover, you know, at times these things in them and these other people that we can be so critical of can easily become us. You know, as we finish up this series, I want us to look at this morning one more person in the Bible that kind of tends to get labeled as a villain or one of the bad guys in the scripture. This guy, Pontius Pilate, this Roman authority who handed Jesus over to be crucified on the cross. Because, you know, I think when we take some time to examine the situation that he found himself in, that we take some time to look at his heart and explore that, we can find that many of us struggle with the very same types of things that Pilate was wrestling through. And so if you have a Bible this morning, I want to invite you to turn to the book of John, chapter 18. John's in the New Testament. It's the fourth book there, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And if you don't have a Bible with you, we'll be happy to put the words on the screen behind me so that you can follow along. And what I want to do this morning is, I'm just going to warn you, I want to walk through a rather large chunk of scripture right up front. Because what I want us to do is I want us to get the context of the situation that Pilate finds himself in. Because if we don't understand the larger context, then we really miss some critical elements of the situation. And it becomes much easier to simply look at what Pilate did and dismiss it and condemn it. Now, leading up to this point here in John 18, Judas has just betrayed Jesus. And he's been handed over to this mixture of Roman and religious officials who keep taking him to different authorities in this attempt to have one of them order his execution. And so that's where I want us to pick it up. John chapter 18, starting with verse 28. It says, "Then the Jews led Jesus from Caiaphas," and Caiaphas was the high priest at the time, "led him to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning. And to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, the Jews did not enter the palace. They wanted to be able to eat the Passover." Now, you'll notice kind of an irony here at the beginning of the story. How these certain Jewish leaders, they didn't want to enter the governor's headquarters because their own oral traditions, not scriptures, mind you, not because God had commanded something, but their own traditions that they had kind of formed on their own dictated that if you stepped into the home of a non-Jewish person, you would become unclean. And so there's this ironic tension in how they're so committed to this ritualistic ceremonial purity, and yet at the same time, they're aggressively pursuing the execution of an innocent man. So there's this ironic contrast between these two things that they're pursuing. Verse 29. "So Pilate came out to them and asked, 'What charges are you bringing against this man?' 'If he were not a criminal,' they replied, 'we would not have handed him over to you.' Pilate said, 'Take him yourselves, judge him by your own law.' 'But we have no right to execute anyone,' the Jews objected. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" You know, and Jesus responds brilliantly here. Oftentimes when Jesus gets asked questions in the scripture, we see him ask questions in return. Because what Jesus wants to do is he wants to get it to the heart of what's behind this, of what you're asking. So Jesus says, "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You're right in saying that I'm a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. And with this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him. But it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, verse 40, "No, not him. Not him. Give us Barabbas." Now, Barabbas had taken part in a rebellion. Now, in other parts of the scripture, in the book of Matthew specifically, we read how Pilate brings these two men out and he presents Barabbas, who was, Matthew also includes, was a notorious murderer. So he's this prisoner and he's awaiting execution. And so Pilate brings these two men out, Jesus and Barabbas. And the crowd yells, "No, don't release Jesus. Give us Barabbas." Chapter 19. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. The soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head. They clothed him in a purple robe and they went up to him again and again saying, "Hail, the King of the Jews!" And they struck him in the face. Once more, Pilate came out and said to the Jews, "Look, I am bringing him out to you to let you know that I find no basis for a charge against him." When Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, Pilate said to them, "Here is the man." And as soon as the chief priests and their officials saw him, they shouted, "Crucify! Crucify!" But Pilate answered, "You take him and crucify him. As for me, I find no basis for a charge against him." The Jews insisted, "We have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God." And when Pilate heard this, he was even more afraid. He went back inside the palace. "Where do you come from?" he asked Jesus. But Jesus gave him no answer. "Do you refuse to speak to me?" Pilate said. "Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above. Therefore, the one who handed me over to you is guilty of a greater sin." From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. "Here is your king," Pilate said to the Jews, but they shouted, "Take him away. Take him away. Crucify him." "Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king but Caesar," the chief priest answered. From that point on, Pilate then takes Jesus. He orders his execution and hands him over to be crucified. Now, as we read through all of that, for the most part, that's how Pilate is remembered. I mean, we have a few other historical sources that outside the Bible that reference Pilate and some of the things he did. But what he is most remembered for is this moment. And it's a moment that Pilate finds himself stuck in. Because on the one hand, he knows what he should do. I mean, the text says that he knows that Jesus is not guilty of the crime that he's being accused of. He's not guilty of any crime. But on the other hand, he has this loud and angry mob insisting and pressuring Pilate into what they want him to do. And so he's stuck. He's stuck between a choice. Do I do the right thing or do I do the convenient thing? Do I do what I know I should do? Or do I just try to please the most people? And you see, what keeps him stuck in that tension is the same thing that keeps you and I stuck in very similar situations. It's fear. It's fear. That's what keeps us stuck. Let me unpack this for you a little more. You see, Pilate worked for Rome. And when Rome would go and conquer different areas of the world, they would appoint different governors like Pilate to rule over these newly conquered citizens on their behalf. But when the Roman government looked at Jerusalem and they looked at this area of Judea, this was a thorn in the side of Rome. They hated going to this area. Because you see, the Roman government kept insisting that people's ultimate allegiance must be to Caesar. That Caesar was Lord, that Caesar was God, that he was in fact the Son of God. And that you need to give your ultimate allegiance to him. And here in Judea and Jerusalem are these Jews who keep insisting that no, their ultimate allegiance is to Yahweh, is to God. And so there's this constant tension between these two groups, between the Jewish people and the Roman government. And it was frustrating for any type of ruler to try to maintain any sense of peace or any sense of control because you have these people who keep insisting that they are under the authority of someone greater than you. And so if you were an official in the government, this is not a place that you wanted to stay long. I mean, this job on the scale of Roman governmental positions was low on the totem pole. And so very likely Pilate was hoping that if he could just make it through this time in Jerusalem, if he could just have an effective tour of duty here, then that would probably lead to a promotion. That would lead to a better paycheck. That would lead to an easier area to oversee. And so Pilate finds himself with these competing tensions. He wants to set Jesus free. And he wants to do what is right. And yet he's afraid. He's scared that if he does, he'll lose control. He won't be able to maintain peace in the city. And when that gets back to Rome, then he could lose his job. He could lose his career. He could lose his prominence. He could lose his wealth. Even lose his life. Because if it got back to the Roman government, you know what? This man had a rebel king, someone who was putting himself in direct opposition to Caesar, with this charge of being a rebel king right in front of him, and he let him go, then he would be seen as a traitor to Caesar. And so throughout this moment, we see this fear consuming Pilate, torn between what he knows he should do and what it will cost him if it does. The power and the control and the prestige and his reputation. And you know, and so when we hear this story and we read through this story in the New Testament, it's easy to kind of look at Pilate and just be like, man, grab a backbone and just do what you know is right. You know what? There's the right thing to do. Why don't you just make the decision? But as you take more time to reflect on it, perhaps you and I relate to him and to his situation more than we care to admit. Maybe for you it's as simple as you knowing that your spouse is better at numbers than you are. Maybe your spouse is more detailed than you are. And you know that what you should probably do if you want to have a healthy financial outlook is you need to let them manage the finances in your home. But you're afraid that if somehow you turn that over, then you're going to lose your ability to be in control. And you're afraid of losing that. And so you're just kind of stuck in where you want to be financially and the reality of what you're able to actually do on your own. Maybe you're a boss. Maybe you have some employees underneath you, and you know you need to let someone go. That it's the right thing for you to do, for the organization to move forward, but you're afraid of making people mad. You're afraid of making people upset. And so you're just stuck between knowing what you should do and what you're afraid will happen if you do it. But, you know, maybe it's more complicated than that. Maybe it has many more layers than that. And maybe it's something like that, you know, that you shouldn't, that you should refuse to lie to your customers. I mean, you want to be a person of integrity. You want to be honest with people. But your boss keeps insisting that you need to do whatever it takes to close the deal. And so you want to do the right thing and you want to be a person of integrity. But you're afraid that if you don't, you're not going to close the deal and you're going to get fired, lose your job. And so you feel stuck. Maybe there's something that you know you should be honest with your spouse about, that something you did or something that you didn't do, but you're afraid to. You're afraid that if you actually do tell them, then it's going to cost you some trust. It's going to cost you some peace in the home. It's going to cost you some time where you're going to have to walk around on eggshells and cost you some respect, and you don't want to lose that. Maybe you're in a store, or maybe you're in a public place, or, you know, at a friend's house. And maybe you're a parent and you have a child who keeps being disobedient. They just don't seem to want to listen. They didn't have their nap today and they're cranky. And so you know that you should discipline them. You know that you should do the right thing and that you need to stop the behavior that you're doing. But you're afraid if you do, then they'll cause a scene. And if they cause a scene, then you're afraid of what other people are going to think about you as a parent, what they're going to think about your kids and your ability to raise your kids the right way. And so you're just stuck. Maybe you know you should take some bold steps and confront someone's addiction because you see how it's hurting them and how it's hurting others, but you're afraid that it could cost you a friendship. It could cost you some popularity, and so you feel stuck. So what do we do? I mean, perhaps the better question is what should we do? When we feel stuck and we feel scared. You see, when we find ourselves in that moment, in that critical moment, what we want to do is we want to hide and we want to avoid the fear. But rather, instead, we need to do what's most counterintuitive to us. And what we should do is step into it. To step into that fear and into that moment, to refuse to let fear drive our decisions and the choices that we make. But often that's not what we do. Instead, we try to figure out a way. How do we avoid it? How do I find some way to get around it? And if you notice, that's exactly what Pilate did. You see, Pilate, remember, he is the one with the authority and the power to make the decision to free Jesus. It is Pilate's decision to make. But instead of stepping into the fear and making it, he tries to manipulate the situation. He tries to make it so that someone else will make the decision for him so that he doesn't have to lose anything, so it doesn't cost him anything. And you notice what he does. He brings out this prisoner, Barabbas, and he says to the crowd, okay, now, this is your custom at Passover for me to release one of these prisoners to you. So which one do you want me to release to you? Do you want me to release to you Barabbas or Jesus? Now, certainly in Pilate's mind at this point, he's thinking, okay, I mean, Barabbas is this widely known murderer. Now, there's no way that this crowd of people is going to want me to release this widely known murderer back to live among them and back to live among their children. There's no way. So if I can just put him up against Jesus, then surely then they'll just pick Jesus. And then I don't have to make that decision. I don't have to lose any face. I don't have to lose any of my reputation or control. But you see, to his shock, the crowd says, no, give us Barabbas. Free him. We want the murderer back. And so that plan falls apart. And the pressure keeps mounting. And still at this point, Pilate could have stepped up and said, all right, fine, well, I'm going to make the decision. This is the right thing to do. But no, Pilate's still trying to find a way. How can I get around this? How can I make it so that someone else has to make this decision for me? And so immediately after he frees Barabbas, he orders that Jesus be sent off to be flogged and to be beaten and to be humiliated. And so Jesus comes back before Pilate, and we see that Jesus, he's bloodied, he's beaten within an inch of his life. And Pilate walks out to the crowd. He goes, okay, now look, listen. I find no basis for any crime, any charge against this man. And then he brings him out, and he shows him to the crowd. And surely, again, at that point, Pilate must be thinking, okay, if I can simply just beat him bad enough to the inch of his life, surely this crowd, you know, this religious crowd has any sort of moral decency about them that they would look at this guy and say, all right, you know what? He's had enough. And Pilate is, you know, if I can just keep insisting that there's no charge, there's no evidence that he's committed any crime, surely the moral decency of the crowd would just say, okay, yeah, he's had enough. He's been punished enough. But again, it says they only shout louder. Crucify him. Crucify him. And so Pilate's stuck. He's just stuck. He's stuck between knowing what he should do and what he knows is the right thing to do and what he may lose if he does. And so he's frustrated because he keeps trying to get someone else to make the decision that is his decision to make. And so he finds himself once again with the decision squarely on him. Do I do the right thing? Do I do what I know I should do? Or do I do what will cost me the least? The Pilate just keeps trying. It says that he goes back to Jesus again. And he sits down with him and he talks with him and he questions him. And he's trying to get from Jesus some reason. Give me any reason that I can justify in my own mind of why you need to be crucified and executed. And then it comes to verse 12 in chapter 19. And at this point in the story, it looks like Pilate's finally going to get some resolve, that he's finally going to step into his fear and make a decision. Look at what it says in verse 12. It says, from then on, after questioning Jesus and talking with him, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. And it seems at this point, okay, you know what? I've talked to him. I've questioned him. Everything I've done, nothing has worked. And so you know what? It's going to just have to be my decision. I'm going to just try to set him free. But you see, the crowd is smart. And they sense this thing in Pilate that he's beginning to waver. And so the crowd pulls out this trump card that they've been holding on to the whole time. This one thing that they knew could leverage the fear in Pilate's heart more than anything else. Look at what they shout. If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. This same group of religious leaders who were known for their dislike of Rome leverage the moment and basically say, you know what, if you don't crucify Jesus, we're letting Rome know that you're a traitor. And so from that point on, Pilate's done. He's just done. The fear's consumed him. And rather than stepping into it and facing it, he just gives into it. And he hands Jesus over to be crucified. But as he does it, Matthew records a different part of the story that John doesn't record. And that's one of the advantages of having four different writers write about the life of Jesus, because they see things through different lenses and they notice certain things and record different things, and we get different angles of his life. Notice what Matthew records as we wrap this up in chapter 27, verse 24. It says, when Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. It's your responsibility. So you see, when the decision time finally comes, and when Pilate actually has to make a decision, again, he wants to avoid any sense of responsibility. He wants to push any of that off of himself. You know what? It's not my fault. It's not my fault. Don't put this on me. When all along the decision was his. The decision was his to make, but rather stepping into the fear, rather than doing what he knew was right and what he should do. Pilate just washes his hands and walks away. And he pretends that somehow by just kind of ceremonially washing his hands, it can justify him not stepping into the moment and doing what he knows he should do. I'm going to ask Stephen to come out, and I'm going to ask him to just play for us for a moment. And as he does, I want us to just to take a few moments, and I want to just ask a couple questions that I want us to think on and think about, you know, as we've been going through this series, Them or Us. We keep wanting to, you know, to highlight this struggle that these different individuals have gone through and what's going on in their hearts, and try to see what is it that's going on them that we also resonate in a similar way. And so just as we go through a few questions here, maybe you want to bow your heads, maybe you want to close your eyes, maybe you just want to kind of to look straight ahead. But I want to give us some time just to think and to reflect and to let God kind of search our hearts and bubble some stuff up in us that maybe we need to deal with. So maybe this morning, do you find yourself caught in a choice of knowing what you should do and feeling pressured by what others, what the crowd around you thinks you should do? There's something in you that says, you know what, I know this is the right thing, I know this is what I should do, but these voices are so loud that keep insisting and pressuring that I do this. Is there a place in your life that you're caught in a very similar spot this morning? Maybe it's a decision that's waiting for you, and you just keep hoping that someone else will make it for you. You keep trying to figure out a way, how can someone else make this decision so that I don't have to be the one to make it? And you keep trying everything you can think of, but it's still there. Maybe the someone else that you're waiting for to make the decision is time. Maybe you're just hoping, you know what, if enough time passes, it'll just kind of go away and it'll disappear on its own. And you use time as an excuse to not step into the fear and to make the decision that you know that you need to make, and you know that's the right thing to do. Maybe there's an area of responsibility in your life. And you find yourself in this spot where you're just tempted to just kind of wash your hands and walk away. And you're in this spot where you just feel stuck. Feel stuck between what you know that you should do and afraid of what it will cost you if you do. And maybe your situation is kind of like Pilate's, where the momentum just keeps building and the pressure just keeps mounting with every passing day. And every day it gets more and more difficult to actually step into the fear, and the fear gets greater and the fear gets bigger because now it's going to cost you more because you keep waiting and waiting and waiting. And you just think, you know what, I've waited too long. There's no way I can admit to that now. There's no way I can confess to that now. There's no way I can go and accept responsibility for that now. It's just been too long. It's going to cost me way too much. But there's something that you know you should do. But you're afraid and you just feel stuck. So maybe if you find yourself in one of those situations, what I want to invite you to do is just over the next couple moments, I just want to invite you to pray and to ask God for the courage to step in to the fear, to confront it, to make not the convenient decision or the easy decision, but the hard decision, committed to doing what's right. So Stephen's going to sing this song, and as he does that, take time to listen to the words and just take time to reflect and let God search your heart and ask Him for whatever you need. That you didn't let your fear of loss of the cross prevent you from taking action on our behalf. And Father, I pray that in the little things, whether it's a small thing or whether it's a huge thing, that God, you would give us the courage to step into the fear that can consume us. To it and have the courage to do what we know it is that we should do, to do the right thing. God, I pray that what we would be committed to is not committing to what it is that will work out best for us, but God, that what we would be most committed to is to you and to your ways and that we would trust that you will always lead us into a life of freedom, a life of peace, a life that you have created to be the best life possible. So God, help us to trust you ruthlessly and let that overcome any fear that we have of anything that we think that we might lose. Help us to see that the life you're inviting us into is greater than anything we think it'll cost us. So God, we thank you for today. We thank you for this series and for what you've pulled out of us. And Father, I pray that we may more authentically walk in your ways. We love you and we thank you in the name of Jesus.